Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the Q&A session, if you'd like to ask a question, you may press star one on your phone. Today's call is being recorded. If you have any objections, please disconnect at this time. Now I'd like to turn the call over to Ms. Kathy Harbin. You may begin.
Thank you, Ted, and thank you all for joining us today. There continues to be great interest in influenza. We've called this briefing to get you the latest FluView numbers and to provide advice on preventing the flu and information about what people can do to reduce the risk of flu or serious illness. We're joined by CDC Director Dr. Brenda Fitzgerald and Dr. Dan Jernigan. He is Director of the Influenza Division in CDC's National Center for Immunization and Respiratory Diseases. Dr. Jernigan will address questions following our briefing. I'll turn the call over now to Dr. Fitzgerald.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us. This is clearly a topic of much interest. We appreciate you being here, and we look forward to answering your questions so you have information that you can act on. CDC is the common defense for the country against health threats, and clearly one of the threats facing us right now is influenza. We are currently in the midst of a very active flu season, with much of the country experiencing widespread and intense flu activity. Many of you maybe have been directly impacted by this. You may have been sick with the flu yourself or are caring for loved ones who are sick. I also know that many of you have received may have received the flu vaccine this season, but you got sick anyway. Or you tried to fill a prescription for medicines to treat the flu, and it was difficult to do. We are here today to discuss these issues and our latest information with you. So far this season, influenza A, H3N2, has been the most common form of influenza. These viruses are often linked to more severe illness, especially among children and people age 65 and older. When H3 viruses are predominant, we tend to have a worse flu season with more hospitalizations and more deaths. While our surveillance systems show that nationally the flu season may be peaking now, we know from past experience that it will take many more weeks for flu activity to truly slow down. We also know that you can reduce your risk of getting the flu through everyday good health habits like covering your mouth when you cough and frequently washing your hands. You need, of course, to limit contact with others who might be sick, and if possible, stay home when you are sick to help prevent the spread of germs and respiratory illnesses like flu. These are the most important measures that we all should be doing. We also continue to recommend the flu vaccine. While our flu vaccines are far from perfect, they are the best way to prevent getting sick from the flu, and it is not too late to get one. And as of this last month, manufacturers reported that they have shipped more than 151 million doses of flu vaccine, so it should be readily available. Someday, of course, we hope to have a universal flu vaccine, one that attacks all influenza-type viruses and provides protection that lasts for years. But until that day arrives, we will continue to improve the vaccines that we have and find ways and tools to help Americans reduce their risk of getting sick. Now I'll turn it over to Dr. Jernigan, who will talk more about the activity we're seeing this season and answer your questions. Again, thank you for being here. We appreciate your interest.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Fitzgerald, for the opportunity and to go into a little more depth on some of the information that will be available today in our CDC FluView document that you can get from the CDC website and from other sources. What I'd like to do is talk about three things in particular. Talk about where is the flu right now. Talk about what that experience of flu is in the outpatient setting where there's clinicians are seeing those patients, mostly in doctor's offices. And then finally, what's happening with hospitalizations and get some sense about the severity of illness that's occurring out there. The first is with this geographic spread, or where is flu happening? And I think the simplest way to describe it is that flu is everywhere in the U.S. right now. There's lots of flu in lots of places. Our team that does this kind of surveillance studies actually has been doing this particular kind of thing for 13 years, and this is the first year that we've had the entire continental U.S. be the same color on the graph, meaning that there is widespread activity in all of the continental U.S. at this point. So it is in a lot of places and causing a lot of flu. And so I think the sense that the nation has right now is that a lot is happening and we're seeing it across different media that's being reported. The second thing is what's happening in the outpatient setting. CDC works with 2,000 or more providers who provide us information about what's happening in the clinics. And what we can see is that there's been a very rapid increase in the numbers of people coming in to see their doctors or their healthcare providers. So what we're seeing is the season has been started early and that it's probably peaking right about now. If we were to compare this to that kind of activity that occurred in the past, it's looking a lot like the activity from 2014-15 and from 2012-13. Both of those seasons were seasons where the strain H3N2 was the predominant strain, and that's a strain that's, like was mentioned, is going to be associated with more cases, and it's going to be associated with more hospitalizations, and is associated with more deaths. In terms of the numbers, we are, again, having a slight increase this week. We're up at 5.8%, which is a slight increase from last week. It's not quite as high as the 6% that was seen in 2014-15, but still early season peaking now. Finally, in terms of the hospitalizations, we have a number of hospitals that participate in a Sentinel network across the U.S. where we count the numbers of laboratory-confirmed influenza hospitalizations. And what we're seeing there is also that rapid rise in the numbers of people that are being hospitalized with laboratory-confirmed flu. In terms of the numbers, this week in the flu view, we will report that there are 22.7 hospitalizations per 100,000 people in the United States. That's up from 13.7 last week, so that's almost doubling in terms of the numbers just in the last week. If you were to look at who is being hospitalized, clearly the highest rates are among those that are over age 65, and even for those that are age 50 to 64 in that sort of baby boomer generation, they're also seeing high numbers, and they are increasing over last week. The other area that we are, of course, following closely is that children younger than 5 years has also increased or almost doubled in the last week. So the people that we see affected with H3N2, that is the very young, the very old, and those with underlying conditions, clearly are showing up in the hospitalization data as being the ones most affected. One other thing that we've been monitoring is mortality. And we're sad to report this week that there are an additional 7 flu-associated pediatric deaths. This brings the total number of flu-related pediatric deaths reported so far to CDC to 20. In addition, many people, I think, have been following anecdotes and reports in the media of young, otherwise healthy adults who have been admitted with very progressive influenza disease that have then died because of that. These reports are out there. It's just a reminder that flu, while causing mild disease in a lot of people, can also cause very severe disease and death in others. A little bit of context around what's happening this season compared to others. When we look at all the different indicators and surveillance data that we have, this season seems to be tracking the two more previous H3N2 years, the 2012-13 year and the 2014-15 year. Many of you may remember 2014-15, which was a season where there was a significant drift and the vaccine effectiveness was very low that year, and we had a lot of cases, perhaps upwards of 700,000 hospitalizations during that year. Right now, while we're tracking the first part of the season, we can't say for certain what it will look like for the remainder. However, it is looking like our season now seems to be tracking somewhat worse than 12-13, but perhaps not as bad as 2014-15. We actually published recently a paper looking at how to characterize influenza seasons into levels of severity. And over the last 13 years, there have only been two seasons where we have what's called high severity. The first was 2003-04. The other was 2014-15, which both of those were H3N2 predominant years. So whether we will reach that level this season, we don't know, but we think it's probably somewhere between those two, between 12-13 and 14-15. The hospitalizations also that we've been tracking is likely for them to be hitting somewhere between those two seasons as well. If we then look at the timing of the season, even if we have hit the top of the curve or the peak of the seasonal activity, it still means we have a lot more flu to go. We're currently in the seventh season right now, and in the past, if you look at the seasons like this one that we're having, there's at least 11 to 13 more weeks of influenza to go. In addition, there's also other strains of influenza that are still to show up to be a major cause of disease. We always know that the B viruses, which the vaccine also covers, will be showing up later in the season. And so another reason why it's good to go ahead and get vaccinated now if you have not gotten vaccinated. But we are also seeing H1N1, which is one of the other influenza A viruses, starting to show up in states that have already had H3 activity. So it's possible we may have a pretty robust season, not just with H3, but with these others as well, and therefore a good reason to go ahead and get vaccinated if you have not. A lot of that information, those numbers, the graphs, all of that is on the CDC website that you can actually play with those numbers and make graphics as well. Let me switch now to the use of antiviral drugs. While influenza vaccination is the best way to prevent influenza infection, antiviral treatment with antiviral drugs, these are approved and recommended to treat influenza illness. These drugs can lessen the symptoms and shorten the duration of illness. And there are observational studies and other studies that have shown that they can prevent serious flu complications. So during influenza epidemics with widespread and intense flu activity, flu antiviral drugs can reduce the burden of illness in the community. Most people who get flu have mild illness, and they don't need to have medical care or antiviral drugs. However, some people are more likely to get very sick from flu. We've seen that some states have even had states of emergency called because of influenza in their states right now. And so for that reason, not everyone needs to get antiviral drugs, but there are certain people that should. CDC recommends that people who are very sick or people with flu symptoms who are at high risk of serious flu complications should be treated as soon as possible with flu antiviral drugs. Who are those people? That means people that are 65 and older. It means young children. It means people with chronic conditions like diabetes, heart disease, or asthma. It means pregnant women and others who are more vulnerable to serious flu illness. Clinicians shouldn't wait for confirmatory testing, but they should begin treatment if they suspect flu in a severely ill or high-risk patient. For more information, you can go to our website. All of this antiviral guidance is there. And in addition, a health alert notice was sent out to healthcare providers, and you can find that on our website as well with the guidance on the use of antiviral drugs. There has been a lot of interest in antiviral drug supply. CDC has been in regular contact with influenza antiviral manufacturers regarding supply and other issues. And while the total reported national supply of influenza antiviral drugs should be sufficient to meet this high seasonal demand, some manufacturers are reporting delays in filling orders, and CDC is aware of spot shortages of antiviral drugs in some places that have high influenza activity. There are a number of new manufacturers on the market because of the new formulations, that is, generic formulations are available. So there are more people making the drugs. However, it may be that pharmacies need to check with those different manufacturers to make sure that they can get those drugs. So we are working closely with these manufacturers to address any existing gaps in the market. Additionally, pharmacies and others that are attempting to make bulk purchases of influenza antiviral drugs may need to call more than one distributor or more than one of these manufacturers to locate medications available for purchase in the short term. CDC has updated its antiviral drug supply webpage with manufacturer information and phone numbers for inquiries related to antiviral purchases and availability. One thing for patients that are trying to find these drugs, individual patients seeking to fill an influenza antiviral prescription may want to call ahead to their pharmacy and make sure that the product is on the shelf, and if not, find alternative pharmacies or other ways to get that medication. The final thing with antiviral drugs is that they work better the earlier you begin to take them. So getting them as quickly as possible is best because their action is better when they're taken earlier. A little bit now about vaccination. Vaccination is our main tool to prevent influenza infection, and CDC recommends that vaccination efforts continue as long as influenza viruses are circulating. It takes about 2 weeks for protection from vaccination to set in, but as I said, we have a lot of flu season to get through still. So we will see other influenza viruses start to circulate later during the flu season, and most flu vaccines protect against all four of those circulating viruses. The B viruses are still to really show up and take off, so getting a vaccine would help cover them as well. The manufacturers are reporting that they've shipped more than 151 million doses of flu vaccine, so there should be product available to folks. One tool you can use is to go to the CDC website and look up the Vaccine Finder. This is a tool you can put your zip code in, and it will help find where there are vaccines near you. I just wanted to make a quick point about vaccine effectiveness this season. In addition to being associated with increased severity, H3N2 seasons also are associated with vaccine effectiveness that is lower than what we usually see against H1N1 or influenza B viruses. The preliminary vaccine effectiveness data from studies ongoing this season will not be available till at least mid-February. We're still enrolling patients in our study sites, and at this time we're using laboratory data to try and see to suggest how well our vaccines may work. Our information so far suggests that vaccine effectiveness against the predominant H3 viruses will probably be somewhere around what we saw in the 2016-2017 season, which was in the 30% range. While this is better than the 10% that has been reported from Australia in one study, it still leaves a lot to be desired, and we are very well aware that we need to have better flu vaccines. There are many steps that have been taken in the past few years to try to make our vaccine supply more robust and more effective. I'm happy to address that in the Q&A period if anyone is interested. We definitely need better technologies, and there are some new technologies that are out there, but getting better vaccines is a great thing. So in summary, we're seeing a very active flu season and early signs that the season may be severe. Right now, our most important tool for treatment is influenza antiviral medications. Our main tool for ongoing prevention should be flu vaccines. And of course, do not forget to take the everyday common sense behaviors that your mother taught you. Stay away from people who are sick. Stay home from work or school if you get sick. And cover your cough and wash your hands often. These actions can reduce the spread of respiratory illnesses like flu in the community. So thank you very much for that, and happy to take questions at this time.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Jernigan. Ted, we're now ready for questions, please.
The phone lines are now open for questions. If you'd like to ask a question over the phone, please press star 1 and record your name. If you'd like to withdraw your question, press star 2. Thank you. The first question in the queue is from Maggie Fox with NBC News. Your line is now open.
Thanks very much. I want to make sure that we've got this message clearly. There have been some very wrought headlines out there, but you're saying, calm down. The farthest we have to go back to see a flu season this bad is just 2014, 2015. Is that right? And I have a follow-up.
Yeah, flu seasons every year are bad, so there's never a mild flu season. And this season is on that more severe side We don't know exactly where it's going to end up, but the indicators from 2014-15, we haven't quite reached those yet. It's going to be this is a bad flu season. We don't know if it will be a high severity season or not, but all the more reason to take those precautions like we just talked about, get your vaccine, and then if you are sick, and certainly if you have underlying conditions, be sure to talk with your doctor about antiviral drugs.
And there's no indication that there's been some unexpected mutation in the strain of H3N2 that's circulating. There's no indication of neuraminidase inhibitor resistance, correct?
Right. So with regard to the antiviral drugs and resistance, we are not seeing really any of these viruses that are currently circulating that will not work with the antiviral drugs. Currently, there's also tamivir. There's also zanamivir, which is an inhaled drug. There's also a new drug called peramivir, which can be given through an IV and can be given to children now. So in severe cases, there's more options than we had before, and that's a good thing. So we're not seeing any of that resistance develop right now.
Next question, please.
Next question in the queue is from Brenda Goodman with WebMD. Your line is now open.
Hi, Dr. Darnigan. I just wanted to get a clarification on the 30% estimated vaccine effectiveness. Was that for, is that your early estimate for overall vaccine effectiveness, or is that against H3N2 specifically?
Yeah, so that was the H3N2 specific at the low 30s. I think the overall for that year, for 2016-17, was around 39, so almost 40% overall when you look at the effectiveness of the vaccine against all the different circulating viruses that year. So when we look at it just for the H3 component, which was the predominant virus that year, last year, it was in the low 30s.
Thank you.
Next question, please.
Next question is from Lena Sun with The Washington Post. Your line is now open.
Hi, Dr. Jernigan. Thanks for taking the call. I was looking at the FluView that was just posted, and I just wanted to double-check something about severity this season versus 14-15. On the chart that looks at percentage of visits for influenza-like illness, you know, the red line, it looks like it's continuing to go up, but the previous seasons, by this point, the number of cases had already fallen rapidly. So I just wanted to make sure I'm looking at this map correctly, this chart correctly, the red line versus the pink.
Right. So the red line with the triangles is the current season, like you had mentioned. I think one important point is when you've seen one flu season, you've seen one flu season. And so exactly what happens to the red line with the triangle over time, we expect that it will drop similar to the pink and the blue lines, which were the 2014-15 season and the 2012-13 season. So that's what we expect to happen, but we never know. I would say that, yes, it's likely to start dropping. The fact that it is slightly different than those other two seasons, it's hard to make any determinations about what that means. We follow it in this way. We follow it in other ways. And in general, we see things peaking right about now. But, again, that means there's a whole lot more flu to go this season.
Next question, please.
Betsy McKay with The Wall Street Journal. Your line is now open.
Hi, Dr. Jernigan. Thank you so much for all the helpful information. I had just a couple of questions. One is that you mentioned that hospitalizations increased in the last week and have been increasing in general among even the 50 to 64-year-old baby boomer age set. And I wondered if you had some specific numbers, you know, how high the numbers are and how much they're increasing and how concerned you are about this. Secondly, I wanted to ask what new flu vaccine technologies you think are closest on the horizon. I mean, these have been in development for so many years. It would be helpful to hear what you think is, you know, coming along and could be available soon.
So the actual numbers of people hospitalized, I don't have with me here. We do things in terms of rates, which can drive some people crazy because of the way we present that information. But the rate per 100,000 people for those aged 50 to 64 in the previous week was 15.4, and then for this most recent flu view is 24. So it went from 15.4 to 24 for that 50 to 64-year-old age range. And so one thing, too, is that these hospitalization numbers are based on a lot of data that's collected at hospitals, and so these numbers do get backfilled some, and so they are likely to go up some as the season progresses and more information is collected and able to fill in prior week's information. In terms of the technologies, most of the vaccines that are made in the United States are made using eggs. And so that's something that we've all known about, and it's been in production for many, many years. You can get very high yield, and that's how we're able to get upwards of 151 million doses per year. There are some newer technologies that have come out. One is in the form of a recombinant vaccine. It just has the protein in the vaccine, and that one is called FluBlock. The other is one that is grown in mammalian cells, and that one is called FluCellVax. Both the recombinant protein vaccine and the cell-grown vaccine don't have to use eggs to grow, and therefore it's possible that those vaccine viruses may look more like what's actually circulating out in the community than the egg-based one. It just varies per year. That's with regard to the H3N2 viruses. For the other viruses, the H1 and the B viruses, the egg and the cell look a lot more similar. Our problem has been with H3N2. So those are some of the new technologies. Ultimately, a broadly protective, longer-lasting vaccine, one that you would get once or twice in life and it would cover every flu, we would love to see something like that, but I think that's going to be several years before we'll have something that's like that. So in the interim, we're pleased to see that there are these new technologies and the ways of increasing the antigen, like a high-dose vaccine for senior citizens, and then also using adjuvants as well. So there are technologies out there, and we look forward to seeing improvements from manufacturers.
Next question, please.
Helen Branswell from STAT, your line is now open.
Hi, thanks for doing this and for taking my question. Dr. Jernigan, I was hoping you could sort of talk to us a bit more about how you determine whether or not a season is severe. I mean, the ILI, outpatient ILI chart that, or graph that Lena Sun was just referring to, that really only talks about how much flu is out there. And as I've been watching flu view over the last few weeks. I mean, even though the pediatric deaths are starting to tick up a bit, it's still low. I know those tend to come in late, but low in comparison to other seasons. And I think this week is the first one where the pneumonia and influenza mortality crossed the season-specific threshold. I might be wrong about that, but How do you determine whether a season is severe or just very active?
Yeah, that's a great question and one that plagued us for many years because there was a period in time when every season was referred to as moderately severe. I think a few years ago we decided that we needed to have a much more objective and formal approach to determining how we categorize the influenza seasons, and not one that's just for seasonal flu, but also one that could help categorize, say, a pandemic when it shows up. And so I'll have to direct you to a paper by Matt Biggerstaff. I forget the journal that it is in, but it's from, I think, 2 years. Was it just this last year? Yeah, from 2017, where we actually look at all of these different flu indicators, hospitalization information, outpatient information, mortality data from NCHS, and put those into a framework where we then look at intensity thresholds, and then from that we're able to then categorize those intensity thresholds into moderate, high, and very high severity so that we can begin over time seeing how these different seasons compare to one another. And like I mentioned, the two seasons in the last 13 years where overall severity was high was the 2003-04 and the 2014-15. That information is from that paper by Matt Biggerstaff. I'll take your comment to mean that maybe we should be more clear at putting that into the flu view such that that categorization scheme can be more timely for folks that want to know that information.
Okay. Next question, please.
Rob Stein from NPR. Your line is now open.
Yeah, hi. Thanks very much for taking my question. I just was wondering about the latest numbers on the hospitalizations, the 22.7 per 100,000, how that compares to previous years, like the last, you know, the last couple of bad years, H3N2 years we had. Is that as bad as you were seeing at this point during those years? Not as bad, worse? Just some context for that number.
Right. So we have a couple comparisons there. One is just the comparison to last year, which was, again, a pretty similar virus but occurring over a much longer period of time. At that same period in time, we had, for instance, those that are over age 65, it's 98. Last year it was 56.6. If you compare it with 2014-15, they are slightly higher than what we're seeing right now for the same time period. Now, the question is whether or not we would actually see backfilling of that information that may make this season worse or not. But for comparison, the overall hospitalization rate for week one, that is the week that ended last Friday, the 2017-18 overall hospitalization rate was 22.7. For 2014-15, which was the severe season, the H3 season that had a high severity, the hospitalization rate was 29.9. So, again, there may be an increase in that number for this season, but that's the comparison that we have right now. So 2017-18 is a severe season. We will know a little later exactly how severe, but it does not at this point appear to be as severe as the 2014-15 season.
Next question, please.
Mike Stobie with the Associated Press. Your line is now open.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Dr. Jernigan, do you mind talking for a second about expectations or fears going into this season? There, as you alluded to, there was a lot of discussion about what Australia saw and a 10% effectiveness. Did you all think that you might have a high severity season? And if so, is there any relief no, you didn't have an expectation? And do you mind talking about that? I have a follow-up too.
Sure. If you actually go back to the 2016-17 season, last season, we had a lot of influenza illness that year, upwards of maybe 600,000 hospitalizations just last season. So that was an H3 year, not so different than what we're seeing with the virus this year. The thing about that season, it was extended over time, and so you didn't have this all-at-once phenomena that we're getting now where hospitals are having lots of cases all at once all across the U.S. It was distributed over time. I think Australia probably had a much more peaked season where there was lots of cases at the same time. They also vaccinate less there. They vaccinate older individuals. And so they did have a very notable season. The question is, did Australia determine what we have this season, or are what we're seeing is actually just a continuation of what we had last year? Those things we don't know for certain. It's really hard to predict influenza. And so we are always expecting there to be an unusual season. We're always prepared to monitor for any severity and also prepared with messages and other tools to help folks respond to whatever kind of influenza season we end up getting.
Okay, so you weren't necessarily thinking it was high severity. You just didn't know for sure.
I think that for most of us in the division and elsewhere in the influenza community are rather humbled by this virus, and so we're always prepared for a severe season, and we always welcome a less severe season, but it is very difficult to predict what will happen.
Okay. Without your follow-up, Mike? Okay. We have time for one more question.
Nancy Burton from the Weather Channel, your line is now open.
Yes, hi. Thank you, Dr. Jernigan. Is this outbreak being called an epidemic?
And if not, how close is it to being called an epidemic? Like, what's your criteria for calling something like that?
Well, epidemic really just refers to an impact upon the people of an infectious disease. And so each year in the United States, we have an epidemic of flu. And so clearly, yes, this is an epidemic. We have very specific criteria where we can say that the epidemic is beginning and ending based on when flu activity goes above a certain baseline. So we've clearly passed that baseline back in November, and we're at the peak of it now, and we'll probably see it go below that baseline in several months. So, yes, definitely in an epidemic, but that's what happens every year in the United States and in the Northern Hemisphere with influenza.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Fitzgerald and Dr. Jernigan, for joining us today, and thank you to the media who have joined us. For follow-up questions, you can call 404-639-3286, or you can email us at media@cdc.gov. Thank you for joining us, and this concludes our call today.
This concludes today's call. Thank you for your participation. You may disconnect at this time.